Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. In South Dakota, as in most of the Midwest and Western United States, railroads played a vital role in growth and settlement. Railroads even recruited homesteaders to the state by planning towns for new arrivals. Even though many of the railroads are now gone, a look at the map and the location of communities shows that their influence continues today. The history of railroads in the state goes back to the early 1860s when Dakota Territory lawmakers chartered the first railroad company. Rick Mills is director of the South Dakota State Railroad Museum in Hill City. He's also part of the State Humanities Council Speakers Bureau, and he has some programs commemorating the state's 125th anniversary. One of his programs details the development of railroading and cultural changes in Dakota Territory from 1861 to statehood in 1889. He joins us on the line. And Rick, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hey, good to be with you, Carl.
Well, when were people in Dakota Territory first thinking about getting a railroad here?
Well, I think probably without knowing specifics, I think even by the time of statehood, folks were looking at the possibility of getting railroads in here before the Civil War, simply because they saw what an impact it was being as far as the cities that have been already developed and platted along the lines even into the central part of Iowa by that time. But, of course, the Civil War put a screeching halt to a lot of things as far as development west of the Mississippi. But by the time of 1872 or so, early 1870s, the push was on, again, big time to get railroads across the country. And, of course, with the development and the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad, south of us through in Nebraska and on out to the West Coast by 1869, the push was really on to get more railroads coming into Dakota.
Now, for the railroads, this is sort of that chicken and the egg question. Did the railroads come first, or did the people come first?
Well, that was an interesting concept out here. Like I said, before the Civil War, a lot of communities were already established. So the railroads were just actually finding their way into established communities, primarily into the central part of Iowa. But after the Civil War, a lot of the railroad companies and the railroad magnates of that time decided, hey, we got to put some railroads out into some of this new territory, and then we're going to have to come up with a new concept. And that's actually doing some of the work ourselves as far as promoting businesses as well as homesteaders to come out and populate our lines. So it was a really interesting combination of how this actually worked. It's a good analogy, the chicken or the egg, because not everyone was created the same. So,
what's interesting, some of the things that I've read, the railroad companies even had people in Europe promoting Dakota Territory?
Very much so. If you look at some of the promotion flyers for primarily the two railroads that really influenced South Dakota in its development, the Milwaukee Railroad and the Chicago and Northwestern, they had the land bureaus not only in many of United States larger communities, but also they had them across Europe. And so much of their material was printed in different languages simply to promote folks that were, for lack of a better term, discontented with their life in Europe at that time and looking for a new way of life in America. All of this promotion on the land Dakota primarily were done in different languages. And we've been able to find some of these original pieces, and we put those into some of our programs. And it's interesting to read some of these descriptions as how they were portrayed in German and in the Scandinavian countries and even into Russia. It's just really interesting to see how they did their marketing in those days.
You mentioned the Milwaukee Road and the Chicago Northwestern being the main railroads. How were the routes that they eventually had, how were they developed?
A lot of it had to do with simply with patterns that had already been developed, some trails, points, especially with Sioux Falls in the southeastern part of the state that was already beginning to be developed with smaller communities. They had to look at the end game as where they wanted to get their routes to. On the Dakota Central, which was built west from Tracy, Minnesota, to Huron and on out to Pierre, basically there was nothing there at the time when Marvin Hewitt and the Chicago and Northwestern, who was the prime backer of the Dakota Central Railway, there's nothing there. But they knew that they wanted to get to Fort Pier because at that point there a lot of steamboat business was going to the Black Hills. A lot of that was being shipped overland by bull and wagon train. And so a lot depended on existing things that were going on at an end point. But in the middle, they kind of made up the game as they went along. That's how we ended up with towns of Huron and Volga and a lot of those on that line. But, of course, the railroads developed a lot of other communities throughout the state, and that's, you know, it's a given. So, I mean, there was some business, some commerce at Aberdeen. That's where the Milwaukee decided to go. There was some at Huron. That's where the Great Northern eventually decided it was going to put lines in. So it was just a combination of things, and a lot had to do with the way the towns marketed themselves to the railroad companies. It was just like getting economic development these days. If you had a railroad, you had a real chance of becoming a mecca.
How much of a lot of this was just simple politics?
Oh, incredible. I mean, in some of my presentations, you talk to folks that, you know, even have some of their family in the past that were part of communities that were lobbying, and the bigger stick that they carried and the bigger carrot was on at the end of that stick as far as I will give you X amount of dollars if you develop your yard facility, your depot, servicing facilities in our town. And sometimes it was just simply a matter of practicality. Like in the case of Mitchell, a lot of folks wanted the town itself to be down on Fire Steel Creek, but the engineers also looked at that and said, look at all of this debris, all of this old wood that's laying around. You know there's been high water here. And of course, we get high water. And they decided to move west a little ways, and that's where the town of Mitchell was developed ultimately. So a lot had to do with the geography, but the politics were absolutely paramount in many situations.
Now, we're primarily talking about the development of railroads in the eastern part of South Dakota. Was it a different situation in the western side of the state?
Very much so. If you look at a map from the 1880s of the railroads and how they developed in Dakota Territory at that time, you were literally getting a checkerboard look at the west, on the eastern side of the river, because the railroads were free to develop in their routes, and they were trying to counteract each other. So there was actually a rush by the three or four different railroads building at that time to get as much coverage on those areas, and a lot of the agriculture was already developing. But west of the river, of course, 1874, gold rush in the Black Hills. But by 1879, when a lot of the railroads were starting to be developed east of the river, the first one was actually being created in the Black Hills. So it was a little bit slower process, and the Black Hills dictated that more railroads went north to south than the traditional east to west, east of the river. And, of course, the Great Sioux Reservation still existed from east of the Black Hills all the way to the Missouri until the Dawes Act created more homesteads in that area. That's when you, by the early 1890s, the Milwaukee and the Northwestern and other railroads were planning to go west. So a lot of the development in the Black Hills railroads happened in the 1880s, 1890s, but there was no connection to the east until 1907. And so that made a whole different scheme of things going on as far as railroads in the Black Hills and later on in the rest of West River.
Now, those initial railroads in the Black Hills, I'm guessing that was the primary motivation there was the gold rush?
The mining and the mining of the miners, as it were, to develop other businesses. But also one of the key components was Belle Fourche and the Northern Ranges were a primary focus on the railroads because there were literally tens of thousands of carloads of livestock could be hauled, not only cattle, but horses for the army, horses for other, and sheep from Belle Fourche and the upper reaches of the Black Hills and the High Plains up in what are now Harding and Perkins County. So that was a big motivator too, but just to get basic commerce out to the Black Hills. The railroad was an incredible step in that direction. And as with all the railroads throughout the state, the development at that time, that was the only show in town. We were certainly long before highways, long before the possibility of commercial freighting. on a large scale, but the railroads made so many things possible, both East and West River. It's just hard to even, you know, really quantify it now, because literally they had something to do with almost where every town was in those days, and the towns that lived and the towns that died, essentially.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking about the early days of railroads in South Dakota, going back to the Dakota Territory days. I'm talking with Rick Mills. He's the director of the South Dakota State Railroad Museum in Hill City. He's also a part of the State Humanities Council's Speakers Bureau, and he's got a number of programs commemorating the state's 125th anniversary, including a program detailing the development of railroading and cultural changes in Dakota Territory, which is what we're talking about right now. When you're clearly talking about the development of railroads in the Black Hills area, I'm wondering how this affected the Native American populations.
Well, you know, a lot of folks, primarily that come into museums like ours in Hill City, they look at the romance and, you know, the icons of railroading, and they don't really take a look at how this not only impacted the homesteaders, but also the Native American and all their cultures. Obviously, you can take a look at the beginning of that, primarily with the buffalo hunting along the Pacific Railroad down in Nebraska, how that split tribes as well as the herds of buffalo up. That was one of the primaries, not so much as you got into the upper Great Plains, except maybe on the Northern Pacific in the 1870s. There's a lot of discussions and recollections of Sitting Bull and some of the northern tribes and their interactions with the northern Pacific and the skirmishes, what is now western North Dakota and then eastern Montana, in the prelude to the Battle of the Little Bighorn. So there was a lot of hostilities there, but obviously, when you start looking at how the Dawes Act changed South Dakota, essentially west of the river, and opened up a lot more territory and created some of the boundaries of our current-day reservations in the state, there are just so many ways you can take a look at this. And one of the things we try and do throughout, not only in our humanities talks, but also at the museum, are, you know, show some of the impacts that that the railroads had. And honestly, we've talked a lot about different impacts with just where the lines went and everything, but also how the railroads did actually, in some cases, improve life on the reservations. But as with almost any subject, you know, there's good and bad with anything, and the railroads were no exception. From the robber barons to the buffalo hunters, the railroads provided a lot of new opportunities, but they also created a lot of pain and a lot of suffering for folks. And it's a hard subject to deal with sometimes. But once again, you have to try and get beyond the romance of railroading and really get into some of those subjects.
In talking about the impact of the railroads on the culture of Dakota Territory and later South Dakota itself, as we were talking about earlier before, the railroad agents going to European countries to recruit homesteaders to move to this area, the countries that they chose then, and that had a big impact on the people that settled, particularly in the eastern part of the state?
Very much so, and actually, yeah, statewide, because if you look at some of it, a lot of it had to do with it hasn't changed much in 125 years or more. It's not really what you know sometimes, it's who you know. A lot of the land agents that the railroads chose had connections in countries that they had, you know, they had moved from. So we actually, some of the Milwaukee Road employees that were chosen to go back to Germany and other areas had, you know, had come out here and homesteaded. And they knew something about the area. So they picked people that knew the area and could kind of go in and say, I know what it's like, I know, you know, what you're going through, but let me give you an option. And come to Dakota, and we will find you a home. And, you know, honestly, in some ways, Carl, it's interesting when you read some of these flyers and some of these promotions from the 1880s during the Dakota land boom, some of the claims they make are just unreal. And it's not unlike what Madison Avenue does to us anymore. You know, sometimes, you know, it sounds almost too good to be true because oftentimes it is. You talk about the bountiful land. You talk about, you know, rainfall that is, you know, perfectly timed. Later on, you talk about if you plow the land, the rain will come. Some of these things were promoted by the railroads. And if they weren't promoted by the railroads didn't do anything to dispute the facts, you know, or lack of facts. And in those cases, you know, I mean, there was some deception, but honestly, in a lot of cases, it did provide folks with an opportunity that they would have never had before. And, you know, many of them proved up, but a lot more than that didn't prove up on their homesteads. And, of course, not every business that folks came out and became a part of, you know, whether it be in agriculture or in mining or logging here in the Black Hills, it was a gamble. And the thing that really made a big difference, obviously, was that the railroad made it possible for them to dream their dreams and to see what happens.
Well, Rick Mills, I want to thank you for joining us on Dakota Midday with a little bit of the history of the early days of the railroad in South Dakota. But before I let you go, maybe you can tell us a little bit about a special event that's going on at the Railroad Museum in Hill City later this month on September 21st. What is this, the Choo Choo Barbecue and Concert?
Yes, a lot of people are laughing about the name, but we're going to have a great event. It's Sunday afternoon, September 21st. We have South Dakota Arts Council helping us with some of the entertainment for the afternoon. And it's going to be Hank Harris and Kenny Putnam, a couple of South Dakota favorites. And they're going to put a new spin on some railroad classics as far as music. We're going to have a barbecue. We're going to have a free museum day at the museum. A lot of other neat things. We're also going to be announcing a special raffle we're going to be doing in 2015 that folks will be able to be participating in. And that will be a Canadian rail adventure across Canada. Something a lot of people have on their bucket list, but they really don't have a chance to do. So this will give an opportunity to at least win a chance to go on a trip like that. But it'll be just a fun afternoon to experience the museum and talk about trains, listen to some great music, and have some food. So what's not to love about that?
All right. Well, Rick, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl. Pleasure.